Hello, how's everyone doing? I think we did not discuss this, but I think it's my turn to do introductions, so I'm going to give it a shot. This is Binary Jazz, a podcast about nothing in particular. We are
and
on
also
episode,
everything.
And yeah, many of the world's problems. We're on episode 1001, is that right? 1010?
Binarily speaking.
I don't remember where we were last week.
Yes.
No, did we did whatever episode launched last week, did we record that? Yeah, whatever we are. I'm here with my fabulous co-host, Allison, who is Airbnb reviewer and steerage class airline rider, and Chris, soccer lawn maintenance technician.
You know, funny thing about that. So Real Salt Lake is the local soccer team in Salt Lake, obviously. And so there's a supporter section that's that we used to sit in. We canceled our season tickets last year, but we're actually going to be sitting there for the women's team this year. Anyway, so right where the supporter section is basically right where the lawn guy, the lawn technician, generally, like, because it's where they put one of the practice goals for before the game. So then before the game, he pushes it off the field. And so whenever he walks by, they actually wrote a chant just for him to,
so great.
I know, isn't it? Like, so whenever they see him, they do his chant and he's like, hi guys. And for a long time, there was like a water-wise, like, don't overwater your lawn advertisement that would go while they were watering the field. And so when they would do that and they see him in the commercial, then they would, like, you know, cheer. It was pretty cool. It's really cool, so, like, because he's some random, like, dude that takes care of the grass, you know?
Yeah.
And to have celebrated. Yeah.
It's a very, I guess, like, there's a lot that goes into that position. On Twitter, I follow the guy that does the, I would call it a lawn. It's not a lawn. It is turf. The turf technician for the for Everbank Field here in Jacksonville, and I mean, like, to watch who he follows and the fields that he remarks on. Like, this is what he does, and he has input and thoughts on all sorts of turf around the world. And it's this whole thing I didn't know existed.
I've read about, like, they use two different types of grass in the turf, and I think that's because it has, like, sort of horizontal striping, and I think that's what creates that effect. But yeah, there's a lot that goes into it, that, and then, like, you have to keep it a certain length and, you know, all that stuff.
And there's a lot of adjusting seasonality, right?
Yeah, yeah.
Zamboni guy, where this recognition of caretaking for the environment that no one's acknowledging.
So real quick, if you're just joining us, this is your first episode. This is pretty much how the episodes go. The only difference is Allison usually brings a topic as opposed to us stumbling across one during introductions. Otherwise, that's exactly like a pocket version of a normal episode for us.
Turf is a big deal, though. Well, I know for soccer it is, because, like, there's a whole debate about fake turf versus real grass and all that. So it's a massive topic.
I could talk about turf for a while.
Although I feel like we would be hijacking the episode, wouldn't be opposed to it. Man, the internet is cool. The stuff you learn on the internet, it's not all garbage.
Are you pro real grass?
Yes. Yeah, definitely.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Definitely.
Because the thing with artificial turf is it's the stuff underneath it is pretty much usually cement. I mean, you could put layers of padding or whatever, but somewhere underneath whatever padding you put onto it is, like, cement, it's concrete, whatever, you know? and you fall on that and it hurts. Whereas if whatever's under the grass is still like, you know, loam and soil and whatever, whatever you need to make grass grow, which is, and the grass itself is springier and like the roots and yeah.
This is You're so much more eloquent than I am.
We have Stanley, the turf expert from...
I would have totally phrased that like there's concrete underneath like fake turf and then under real turf. Who knows what's under there, right? But it's probably softer than concrete is where I would have left. Use the word loam. Like I haven't used the word loam. I mean I probably used it once, like twice or twice just in now. My life, just now. Yeah. Otherwise, like I probably read it in a book in school and couldn't hold my finger on it to Google it back in those days, but I had to look it up and wonder what it was. But I've never used it in polite conversation like this.
To be fair, I might not be using the word correctly.
Well, I would love if that had been my topic for this week.
Loam.
Oh, man, it would have blown my mind if you were like, and our topic actually is turf, actually, so...
good segue, because this week we're talking about loam. What's the plural, loam? I don't even know.
Is there a plural of loam? That is the topic. Discuss.
This is the highlight of my Thursdays, just for what it's worth. So you all know this. Like I like Thursdays I always roll in and it's like that part of the week where you sort of like have that feeling like, have I done enough? Have I accomplished enough for the week? And I kind of think like before the podcast starts, like do I have time to give up this 45 minutes or whatever it is, right? And the answer is I don't have time to not do. Wait, that doesn't make. I have to do it. It's so important. It's vital that I do it because the rest of my Thursday is so much better as a result of it, despite the amount of time I spend on Wikipedia. As a
result. Well, I'm gonna take that compliment.
Totally. I mean it 100% as a compliment. So yeah. We're far enough in. We should probably like figure out what the topic is today.
Yeah, it's not loam. Sorry,
not loam.
But I am going to Google a lot about that later.
Totally.
I'm a little niche expert. The topic this week is something called kintsugi. K-I-N-T-S-U-G-I.
Wait, what?
Yeah. Yeah, that's right. Loam. kintsugi. K-I-N-T-S-U-G-I.
K-I-N-T-S-U-G-I.
It's a Japanese word.
Yeah, I figured that out. Kintsugi.
Well, pin drops.
What do we know about Japan?
Japan is really weird. I could go on for quite a bit about how weird Japan is, and all of my knowledge of Japan comes predominantly from Asian soap operas and anime. But okay. If I'm using that as a microcosm for the entire society, like this is what their pop culture is like, and this is, and also like pictures, obviously. And if I'm using that as like a you know, this is what their pop culture and society is like. This is their form of entertainment. Japan is really weird.
What's the Japanese thing like? Constant improvement, the process thing.
Like
an automotive.
Oh.
You know that too about Japan.
Yeah.
It sounds similar to consume or whatever this topic is.
Yeah, it's a form of like or it's been adapted into like agile development practices. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So I think this
Kanban.
Word
Kanban.
Yeah. So I think this word is related to Kanban.
I don't.
Okay. And I think that because
have both of you visited Japan? I'm just curious.
No.
Or Asia?
No.
No.
I've been around Asia, but not Japan. Japan is on my list. I think it would be fantastic.
Japan's on my list as well. It's been on my list for a long time.
Podcast road trip, everybody.
I'm down.
A live podcast in Japan.
When I was doing booking for a band, we nearly landed a gig at whatever the U.S. military base is over there. I think it's Navy, but I'm not sure. And that would have been like a... I would have had no reason to go, but you're darn right I would have been there, you know, schlepping boxes or something.
And when you say booking for a band, is this a past thing that?
Yeah, it's not a euphemism. It's a thing I did. Yeah.
Yeah. No, but like as a job.
I'm sure that euphemism would.
Aside.
I mean, I got paid for it, but I don't have to make a living. I'm trying to remember what else I did around that time.
And that's what you did. You booked gigs for a band. Like, that's what you did. Was it a band or was it bands plural?
It was a singular band. Yeah. And it was it wasn't like all of my income, and it was a lot of my time, more of my time than it was income percentage wise. It was fun. It was interesting. I was young enough to do silly stuff like that and live on mac and cheese for a while. Say the word again. Spell it again.
Kintsugi.
Kintsugi. It sounds like sushi related.
Food related for sure. I had so my Asia experiences were mostly sourcing products when I worked a couple jobs ago. It was like e-commerce something or other, BPB commerce, and we brought in all sorts of crazy stuff from Asia, mostly like the Pearl River Delta in China and a bit from Taiwan. So in Taiwan, at a factory, we spent the day with anytime you went to a factory, like it was as much about the products as it was about like the relationship building, and you know, you always drank a ton of tea and then had to go eat in the factory and it would feed you. So we went to a Japanese restaurant and you know, I don't speak a lick of I wonder if they speak there. Probably Cantonese. I don't know. I'm not sure what Taiwan's native tongue is. Let's just assume it's Cantonese. Probably not. So we went to this Japanese place.
Fodder for more Googling later.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, the thing is, like, dialects of Chinese all sound pretty much the same to my ear. So, but you can't say they spoke Chinese because there's not a Chinese language.
Right.
There are thousands of them. I digress. Surprise. So we went to this Japanese restaurant and the food was fine, except for this one dish, the grossest dish I've had in Asia. It was this like shot glass, and it was this green. It looked like pudding, jello-y stuff, but it was warm and salty. And I can usually eat anything. I took like 3 bites of this, and I'm like, man, I just can't. It would be rude to not eat it, you know. And I just couldn't eat that thing. I ate some stuff, man, but that was one where I just drew the line. Not sure what it was. The rule of thumb was never ask.
Okay, so there's a Netflix original series that I discovered recently. So my Netflix recommendations is really jacked up now because we went through a stint of watching lots and lots and lots of Korean soap operas. As one does. Dude, Korean soap operas are amazing. I highly recommend. So we got this, I got this recommendation for a Japanese show that is about a guy who is, I don't know, like a sales guy, but he's committed to being like the best sales guy in the world ever. But the only reason why he is committing himself to being the best sales guy in the world ever is so he can use his spare time to go eat the most amazing foods around. And then when he eats the food, he goes into this like weird hallucinogenic, like acid trip of euphoric orgasm whenever he is like eating this, whatever it is, the food. And I'm pretty sure that that weird green jello in a shot glass thing is a thing that he ate.
Yeah.
So I think it's also based around the premise that he's a super taster. So like it's like Super Sweet Tooth Man. It's like it's his name and then Super Sweet Tooth Man or something. I don't remember what the title is, but it's pretty eye-opening.
Yeah. To that end, if I was at a restaurant and someone like presented this dish again, I would totally try it again in a different context. I might not do more than 2 spoonfuls of it, but I'd totally try it.
There's like a 5-minute interlude where he's like trying to choose between 2 different sweet dessert dishes and decide between the white sauce and the brown sauce. And he goes on debating the properties of each sauce in great detail, and eventually decides that he's going to have the brown sauce. But then after he has the one with the brown sauce, he orders the one with the white sauce too.
Yeah. I really love dining opportunities when, like multi-course, where it's like a surprise. and that there's like a lot of like presentation from the wait staff in regards to it, right? Like, here is a whatever. Well, I mean, not presentation like flash, but like explanation of what this dish is and why, and you know, like the thought process that went into it. The artsy fartsy side of
like that. When they have a narrative of like the story of how it's like it was charbroiled to a fine and then sauteed slightly. We sprinkled thyme ever so, like, and then they tell, and then they set it down, and you're like, oh.
I do think that I appreciate like a story about the food more than just like here's your food.
Yeah, here's your magic.
I went to. Oh, I have to Google this restaurant. Hold on.
But that's always like the fun part about sometimes when people, like when restaurants do specials, is because the specials have almost, they often have a better description than the menu descriptions for what it would be if they listed it normally.
So there's this molecular gastronomy restaurant in Chicago called Alinea. And the chef, Grant Achatz, I don't know how to say his name, something like that. Two years ago, they were redoing the restaurant, the interior. So he took the entire restaurant staff on tour, and they did a month in Paris and a month in Miami. And I was in Miami for a conference. I was going to be in Miami for a conference while I was down there. So my brother-in-law and I do this restaurant website. So we decided like this would be like a very cool thing for us to do and write about. Go eat at Alinea while I was in residence in Miami. And I don't remember how many courses it was. I think 13 or 16. The first course was, our seating was like 10:30 PM. And it was, I mean, every single table was like an event. The first course was this little cube that was flavored like a Chicago style hot dog as a welcome. Like the dill, you could taste every part of the Chicago hot dog in it. I ate a balloon that night, like a floating inflated balloon. There was a fire on the table when we sat down, and like five courses in, the waiter like plucked this food out of the fire and unwrapped it and prepared it for us in front of us. The dessert was like just made on the table. Like every course was kind of, it was like an alien like saw food and then tried to create food for humans. And this was the result. I mean, it was so bizarre, and it was like way over the top and way eccentric and extravagant and like
eccentric,
not
combining those two words.
That's where I was going with. Yeah. Yeah. But not something like normal people would eat on a regular thing, right? Like a regular occurrence.
Oh, no, you don't normally eat inflated balloons.
Not out of course I have it. No. So and we left from there probably around 1 AM. We finished and got in the car and drove like 5 hours straight home through the night. And I had to work the next day. I was going to sleep in the car, but every time I closed my eyes, like I couldn't not think about like this entirely different take on food and eating and the purpose of dining and, the whole nine yards. And it really, one stupid meal like changed my thought process in life, in ways I did not expect.
And that experience right there is Kintagi, Kintugi, Kintsugi?
Yeah, Kansume. Kansugi, yeah. It might be. It may be.
So fanciful, maybe.
So have we reached a part of the show where you tell us what it is and then we discuss like how far off we were from guessing?
I could list on one hand the words and concepts in Japanese that I know, and it's not one of them. Like otaku, hentai, manga. I don't know. It probably stops there.
One hand.
I've got Kanban on lockdown.
Kanban. Yeah, there we go.
Yeah. Yeah. I do think, though, that, like,
Osaka.
My Yeah. It either has to be food related or procedure related. Those are the only two options, clearly. Entertainment.
You created yet another binary for my topic to fall within.
Yeah, does it fall within that? Or one of those?
I don't know, because I feel like procedure is like a very broad, like what, I don't know. I feel like that's a really
broad like, what does that mean? Come on.
What is procedure?
this thing
So kintsugi is, it's the art of fixing broken pottery with a special metallic lacquer. So there's a few different ways to fix fractures or breaks.
Don't pretend like you knew what that was.
I didn't know the word. I didn't know the word. I did know of the practice of when delicate or, you know, very valuable china breaks. I shouldn't say that word. Pottery breaks. Then there's an art form to putting it back together. Special paint and glue and whatever, so that it can be reused, and also like the break becomes kind of decorative because they have done it and they've put it back together in this way that sort of emphasizes the craftsmanship that goes into having to assemble it back together piece by piece. And the type of porcelain they use is usually so fine and so delicate that it's not the sort of thing like you drop a bowl and it cracks into like four or five pieces. It's like the type of thing that you drop on the floor and it cracks into a bazillion pieces. And so reassembling it really is like ridiculously time consuming and labor intensive.
I like so much about this topic. I like, number one, that there is a single Japanese word for this, right? Because it takes us a full sentence to explain it. But in Japan, you could say kintsugi and someone said, oh yeah, I would know exactly the context. Number two, I like that there's the celebration of, like what you're saying, when it's reassembled, then it's not like, it's not like glued together. You can't see the seams. Like it's evident where it was broken.
Yeah.
So I like the celebration of the breaking and the fixing, or like the flaws are part of the new creation, or the fixed the original thing put back together. I like that a lot too.
It celebrates the history of the thing as a whole by almost emphasizing the breaks mm-hmm. that have happened. Mm-hmm.
And then the third thing I like is that Allison thinks we can talk about this for almost an hour.
Well, okay, so I
talked about literature for 15 minutes.
I'm a little bit of a ringer on the topic, more so probably than you are, Gary, just because.
Yes, this is awesome. I've waited for this episode where someone actually knew something about the topic.
Well,
I mean,
okay, so
the two of us, as we're not supposed to.
So my partner, Erin, makes pottery. I mean, she hasn't done it in years, but she studied pottery in school as part of her art major. And we brought a kick wheel home from Redlands, California into Utah after she graduated, and she used that for a while, and she did pottery at studios for a while, and we're probably going to get her a new wheel in the relatively near future. But yeah, so like I have learned through osmosis various little things about pottery and pottery making, and I've tried doing stuff a couple times and made really ugly, bad, thick things. And glazes, and I've glazed things, and that's fun. Glazing actually is really fun. And yeah, so that's how I know about this thing. And one thing that I've sort of, like, I guess I've, growing up, I sort of had this idea that, like, when something is broken, like, you screwed up. You know, like, breaking a thing is, like, you screwed up, you asshole. But her approach to things was very different, because it was like things break because they are used. And this idea of kintsugi is very much the same sort of thing, right? Like things break because they are used. If it's broken, it doesn't mean that somebody screwed up. It got broken because you use it. It's a thing that is part of your daily life. And so therefore it shouldn't be like, you asshole for breaking that bowl that I really like. It's like, you know, like, well, that bowl was much loved.
Do you think the concept, building on that, do you think the concept itself, as we become like a one-time use society, like, do you think that concept, like the value of that, either becomes more important because there are fewer things that can actually be fixed? I think about like a lot of plastics, right? Like plastic stuff generally, when breaks, cannot be fixed because of the nature mm-hmm. of plastics. Printers and kids' toys and crap of that nature. And compressed wood, like, furniture is pretty popular, like IKEA stuff. Ah, I can't. IKEA has some good stuff. But, I mean, you know the genre of things I'm speaking. So those sort of things that can't effectively be fixed, like, does that make Kintsugi more valuable for the things that can? You know, like, I have a nice wooden table, and, you know, if I broke a leg on it or were to chip it, like, there's still solutions to fix it. And it may not be as flawless as it once was, but it still has purpose and value and is fine and just cosmetically is different, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that I was reading a thing recently about the Apple iPhone battery thing, how the batteries on this 6s and 7s just suck and they die, and then Apple put this stupid thing in to make your phone suck even more, and how horrible that was. And so as a result, Apple was going to make battery replacements cheaper, so $30 battery replacements if your battery is sucking. And I was reading this article about it, and it was saying, you know, like, probably this wouldn't have this effect, but it would be really nice if this sort of thing led to, like, people treating their phones like people once treated their computers. Like, a part breaks, you go into the thing and you get it fixed, or you open it up and you fix it yourself. Like, the way that phones are made, particularly iPhones, like, it's the sacred thing that you can't open. And that's, you know, people are holding on to their phones for longer because the technology is not advancing nearly as fast as it used to be. So it's pretty much just, you know, a new coat of paint on the old stuff that was there last year. So, like, the progression of things. So it's, and they're really freaking expensive. So why would you drop $600, $700, $800, $1,000 every year, every 2 years? Like, it should be an investment that you are able to, improve on or fix over time. And it shouldn't be prohibitively expensive to do so.
I still have my iPhone 6, and I'm experiencing that, like, right around a couple weeks ago, right around 30%, it just shut off. And when I powered back on, it was like, hey, we tried to do something that used more CPU than we possibly could with the battery you have. So we're going to put you in this throttling mode. You can disable it if you want. I don't care. My phone is like, I mean, I use it for communication generally-ish. But I previously used my phone before I got into dev work. My phone was, like, attached to my ear for 6 hours a day, and or I was sending email or following sales numbers or something on it. Like, I mean, I use it as much as my computer, if not more. And I dropped my phone and broke it. I was either replacing or getting it repaired. And it's funny to have the same device for 2 years now, or maybe longer. I don't know. I'm not sure how long I've had this phone. I don't know. I don't really have any attachment to it. It just does what it does, and it's definitely slower than it used to be, but it's fine.
I decided that there was a problem when, like, I could literally be looking at, like, reading an article on the phone and watch the battery drop from, like, you know, 47% down to 32%, like watching the numbers tick down as I am just, like, looking at a normal, and then I'm like, yeah, that might be an indication I should do something about this. And then I read that article, and then I got the $30 replacement, and it's better. It's not fantastic, but it's better than it was. I assume that's because I have a lot of stuff open and I use it, that it just drained battery. But now I can, like, I used to have to, like, charge it twice a day to get it to, so by the end of the day, it wouldn't be dead. And now I can pretty much go through a day. So, yeah, it made a difference.
I have several questions.
Yes, I have several answers.
The first one, both of you are technology folk, yes. And you repair your own, you've been in the situation where you've repaired your own computers and replaced parts, I would assume. What's the most obscure thing you've repaired on a computer? Like, at what point, like, you were like, situation, you're taking, you're going, wow, at this point, this makes no sense. Like, I'm really putting a lot of time into this one single part.
I have a external hard drive that I got several years ago. It's a Seagate something or other. And when that drive died, I was like, well, I could probably take it apart and put in a new hard drive. So I did. So that's probably the most obscure thing. I also, obscure. So, I probably talked about the photo kiosks that I used to work on. When I was with Albertsons, like, I've taken apart the photo kiosk machines and, like, looked inside, and I used to have an external CD-ROM drive, and I played with those. Yeah.
I don't know.
That was just for fun.
I don't feel like I've done anything that obscure, because I'm also just not a huge hardware person in general. So I feel like the stuff that I've done has been generally straightforward, because if it's too obscure, it isn't usually up my alley as far as me making the decision to replace the thing.
I have my iMac has, it's sitting behind me, and it has a hard drive that died, and I actually did pull off the screen so that I could replace the hard drive. That's about as far as I got though, because like taking the thing apart, like you have to have, like, you have to wedge things into different parts in order to like lift out the stuff, and then like then you can go in and reach, and all the cables are like super short. So I do have plans on replacing that hard drive. I've just been postponing it a lot.
A similar situation with my desktop, where it'll die suddenly and for no apparent reason. Sometimes after 10 minutes, sometimes after 3 days of being on. There's no pattern or usage, but I think it's a power supply issue. But it's also an old enough thing that I'm like, I'm not going to pay someone else to do it. So part of me is just like, should I just try to do the wedge and the prop and maybe manage to fix it, or maybe manage to screw it up, depending on
I did completely screw up a MacBook, a really old MacBook whose hard drive was doing that horrible clicking noise. So I took it apart, I took the hard drive out, and then I was like, ugh. All the guts of the MacBook, like, all over the place, and I couldn't put it back together. And then I think I ended up selling it on Craigslist for $50 or something. Just come take this thing.
I have another one that was, it's an obscure for no real reason. We had the, do you remember the old MacBooks that they came in black and white? I had a black one and my partner had a white one. Something happened to my black one. So basically it rendered it useless. And in the end, we ended up kind of combining them into kind of a Franken laptop. So when you open, it's very much like, kind of like an Oreo situation.
Yes.
Which was kind of pointless in the long run, but it was really fun at the time.
That was the kind of answer I was looking for. Just just for what it's worth. Like, I wanted like that Franken computer. I had pre MacBook, the old iBooks had, I'm not sure what year, there was an issue with the graphics processor where the board would warp and enough to the point where the chip would pull up and the screen would crap out and the system would die. I figured out that if you put pressure on top of the chip, you could hold it in place. So I disassembled the iBook and like used like rubber feet as shims and reassembled it and kind of like created like a clamp on the corner of the iBook and got like another year out of the silly thing. It was no longer portable at that point because it was clamped to the corner of my desk. But it didn't shut down after that.
Yeah.
I also ran a server under the desk that had two power supplies because it had 8 hard drives. So one was an old AT power supply that had like an external power switch as opposed to like the ATX that you wire up to the chassis. So I would fire up like 4 hard drives first. So you hear a little machine like whirring, and then I'd fire up like the drive that was the boot drive. So those 4 drives were already powered up before the rest of the machine powered up. That was some of my weird stuff. I've killed a lot of computers now. It's panic time, obviously. So
I love that this
the part of the program where
has been dubbed panic time.
Yeah, the part of the show where we see the countdown timer on our video recording session, and I get nervous, and Allison presents questions.
We did figure out what the topic was. Okay. I just wanted to make sure that we actually covered that at some point, and but we did, so that's good.
So my first question is, can you name the 7 dwarves? The classic 7 dwarves. I know folklore-wise it's all over the place, but the Disney version.
Dopey, Grumpy.
Happy, Grumpy, Sleepy, Dopey, Sneezy, Susie, and Frankie.
No.
It's close.
I'm not sure
you lose count after a while. I think that's the problem. Happy, Dopey, Grumpy, Sleepy, what now?
Angry.
Grumpy.
Angry.
Angry, grumpy.
Yeah, I can't. The answer is no.
Yeah, I think I start making the stuff up after about 3, 4.
Okay, so what's your favorite city in the U.S. other than the one you live in?
Oh, wow. Misdirection.
I like Portland. I wouldn't want to live there. But of the... I'm trying to think of like internationally because I was limiting myself to the United States. But I still like Portland. It's interesting because I forget how spoiled we are in Salt Lake City, because apparently Salt Lake City, I might have said this before, has the largest per capita number of vegan and vegetarian restaurants in Salt Lake City. They compared it to like New York, and New York would need to like have 400 more vegan specific restaurants to be on the same level as Salt Lake City is now, just because of per cap, because we have a lot for, and whenever we go to other places, and so this is like a thing that I use to determine like how well we'll get on in various cities. Nashville sucked. And Seattle was surprisingly difficult to find places. But Portland is freaking Portland because everybody there is already gluten-free and vegan. So, I mean, that was pretty natural. And it's really pretty in Portland, much more so than other, and I really like urban places. I'm a city boy. So yeah, Portland.
Wow. This is a tough one. This is a really tough one.
Tougher than the Seven Dwarfs?
Yeah, a lot tougher than Seven Dwarfs, because I could Google that. I can't Google what my favorite city besides the one I live in is, because there's just so many good options. Clearly, I have probably eliminated Virginia, anything in Virginia, like in episode 2 or 3 or 10 or 11 or something like that. But outside of that, there's not a lot of cities that I'm disappointed in. I feel like your impression of a city is so much influenced by the people that you meet there or are going there with or know there or whatnot. Man, I can't believe I'm having such a hard time answering this. Let's go with St. Paul.
This one would be the stumper.
St. Paul. Yeah, just as it's most recent in my head as an interesting city I went to. Yeah. But gosh, ask me again in 3 months and it'll probably be a different answer.
I'm sure it will be, yeah.
Because you visited other new cities?
Yeah, maybe, or maybe my thought process will have changed, or maybe my memory will have influenced something, or I'll have some nostalgia about a thing that happened, or I'll be thinking about food, or Chicago, or Detroit, or there's just so many cool places. Why did I buy a house? We should sell the house.
You can still see cool places and have a house.
But think about how much cash I would have if I sold the house and bought something with wheels.
That's literally what one of my coworkers did a couple years ago, is they sold their house and they used that money from the sale of their house to travel across Europe and just nomad it for a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
Well, and on that note, we're all going to go shift our lives.
Yeah.
So now I have to add Googling like RVs to my list.
Hashtag van life.
Yeah. Our old pal Shannon had that really cool camper, right?
Yeah.
That thing was fantastic.
Homemade.
I wonder if I could add a hitch to the minivan.
I'm sure it's possible.
Myself, obviously.
I'm sure it's possible that DIY, yeah. Whether it's wise, is a new...
Thank you for listening to Binary Jazz. If you like this episode, you can subscribe to us on iTunes or Google Play. You can visit us online at binaryjazz.us or follow us on Twitter at @binaryjazz. Don't forget that you can ask us a question through the form on the website or on Twitter, and we'll read it aloud on the next episode of Binary Jazz.